Hey everybody, this is Jeff Meyer. The show you're going to listen to here is an older show that I did when I was still at the HITS Canine Training Podcast. So I've now switched over. I have a new podcast. It's called the Police Canine Training Podcast with Jeff Meyer. The link to that show is in the show notes here. So feel free to click that. You can find me over on my new channel. Basically the same format, same type of all police dog training type issues. And I'll be over there for now on. I left these shows up, though, because I think there's a whole lot of good information still in these other old shows. So kick back, enjoy this show. Just know that it is an older show, and you can find all my new shows at the link in the show notes there at the Police Canine Training Podcast with Jeff Meyer. Thanks, everybody. Hello, everybody. This is Jeff with HITS Canine Radio. As promised, this is our second part in our series about fentanyl. Today we have Gary Haddon on here from Indianapolis. He's going to talk about fentanyl and what they've been doing in Indianapolis, how they worked with their prosecutors to get agreements on prosecuting after they imprinted their dogs, whether or not they imprinted all their dogs or not. You'll hear the answer to that question, and how they went about imprinting their dogs on fentanyl. So if you haven't listened to part one, maybe scroll back one episode, listen to part one with Michael Kamisik from Sheepdog Guardian. We went pretty deep into the woods on a lot of that. And now we are going to start this episode here with Gary Haddon. I hope you enjoy.
This is the official HITS Training and Consulting Podcast. We are America's law enforcement canine training resource. We're raising the training bar for police dogs everywhere by discussing the intricate details of the training techniques used by the experts. HITS Radio is merging the training world with the real world. You've been there. We've been there too.
Welcome to HITS Canine Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Meyer. Today I'm doing another episode on fentanyl. We just did one. We're going to probably put these out back to back. Because fentanyl and imprinting and everything to do with fentanyl, I think, is one of the, if not the hottest issue for detection dogs, canine narc dogs. It's definitely up there in the top two or three. And I get the question a lot, and I've had it for quite a few years, about should we train our dogs on fentanyl? And that answer, I think, is evolving. Like any good program, I think you should always be evaluating how you're doing things. So we had Michael Kamisik on the here, and he talked basically about, you know, make sure you're working with your prosecutor and doing it safely. And then I wanted to bring on a gentleman that has been doing it for quite a while, and they're finding a lot of fentanyl. They're imprinting their dogs on it. They've worked with a prosecutor. So I'm sure there's several agencies that are out there doing it successfully. But I know that Gary Haddon from Indianapolis has been doing it for quite a while, and I think he's probably one of the leaders of this topic, definitely out in the trenches, finding a lot of fentanyl every day with his dog. So I want to bring him on, kind of talk about, we've had him on before to talk about parcel interdiction. So I want to bring him back on and talk about what they're doing. Because in my opinion, from talking to him and just knowing the exact standards that he uses for everything, that I think they're doing it in a very good example that you can, if you're going to go down the road of imprinting your dogs on fentanyl, I think Gary is an excellent resource to kind of hear how they do it and see if it's something you want to do. So with that, Gary, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. And I know you work overnight, so we're doing this in the afternoon, but you probably haven't been up very, very long. So I appreciate you coming on and taking time out of your day to talk with me and sharing some of your information. So for the listeners that don't know you, can you kind of go over your background for us?
Yeah. I've been a police officer going back to since 1990. I worked dual purpose patrol dogs. I got my first dog in 95. And transitioned over to the interdiction side about 12 years ago. So I do that. I still do a lot of patrol dog training for agencies around here, but for 27 years of canine experience. But like I said, my main focus now is on the narcotics side. Our unit, our criminal interdiction unit, is composed of 11 dog teams and ourselves. We have I also train the arson dog, cadaver dog, missing persons tracking dog. So we have a large unit. We have 50 dog teams in Indianapolis itself, and the other trainers handle the other aspects of it. But those are the dogs that I train. And like I said, I've been doing it for a while, and I think we pride ourselves in our agency of doing it right, and making sure that we find out what's trending,
sure,
what's going on. So we keep up on the trends, and then we implement a lot of scenario-based training. I want to add that it's not just because we have large agencies. We have a lot of donut agencies around us, and I hear a lot on your podcast about these one dog or two dog cities or agencies. And for me, I've always kind of reached out to them.
Sure.
We have a training group that we get together with, and we have about 17 members in that training group. Myself and my partner, Julie Case, who's a very talented civilian trainer. And we get together, you know, once a month. And so when we're talking about imprinting fentanyl, they were all on board also because of the amount that's coming through this area.
And can you talk a minute about kind of your position now, what you do every day or every night, I should say?
Well, I'm the head trainer in our unit. I do mostly parcel interdiction work. Our team is usually out there doing a lot of requests. So I'm a TFO, I'm a Task Force Officer with Homeland Security. A lot of our guys are working with DEA and other federal agencies, but we handle a lot of requests on that side of doing that. So that's why we're finding the larger, the bulk amounts of narcotics coming through, if not just in parcels. Recent case that made like national news, one of our guys hit 130 kilos in a semi trailer. 130 kilos of cocaine.
Uh-huh.
And so we're getting, you know, these large amounts, these bulk amounts. And, you know, our guys, again, once we started training on fentanyl, it was because the unintended imprintation of fentanyl came about.
Sure.
We found that our dogs were hitting on, you know, a trunk seam, or we did one in a storage unit recently. And when you get in there, you go, oh, is this heroin? Is this cocaine? It's a white powder, and you test it, and it's fentanyl. So we found out, hey, our dogs are hitting on fentanyl, which led to some of these questions. How can we get it? How can, you know, and I work at the FedEx hub with Customs Dog, and talking to him, he said all the Border Patrol and Customs dogs were imprinted on fentanyl a few years ago, and they have fentanyl kits.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have that resource to get a fentanyl kit.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, when I do seize the fentanyl, I have to put it in the property room. I can't sign it back out.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a policy for them. Hey, this is fentanyl. It's dangerous. We're not giving it back to you.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So let's stop back there. How long ago was it that you started seeing that your dogs were hitting on fentanyl?
I'd have to go back at least 3 years ago.
So several years ago. And that's when you started thinking, you know, and obviously fentanyl's, you know, it's been around for a while and it's getting worse all the time. So at that point, I'm sure one of your first things was, you know, if we're going to do this, I'm sure, and I know you guys prosecute a lot of cases, and I'm sure both on a state level and federally, I assume. So did you have a sit down then with your prosecutors at that time and see where they were at with all of this?
Yeah, so we do. We get most of our cases are going federal, and part of the, you know, the issue was, and again, it was coming up, is that, you know, are the dogs certified on fentanyl? And at the time, they really weren't. We can say that they're hitting on fentanyl because it's been cut into heroin, it's been cut into other things. So again, you get that unintended imprintation, just like you do with cutting agents. And you know, to preface that too, I mean, we continuously proof our dogs off cutting agents too.
Sure.
So, whatever's trending, we have a big container of MSM. There's a lot of other anti-inflammatories that is being used to cut into a lot of the products now too. And we have those on board to proof. But getting back to that, listening to, you know, your podcast and Todd Wilbur was on from Precision. I liked what he had to say, and I looked up his fentanyl odor packs, and I ordered them.
Uh-huh.
And so this way, because we had a case where the defense attorney, you know, he was pretty sharp, and it was a federal case. So you have you know, the question that came out said, hey, you know, your dog, you know, indicated on his fentanyl, and is your dog certified on fentanyl? And the handler, you know, said, yeah. Yeah, the dog is. And said, well, was he certified at the date of the seizure? And he said, no. So how can you explain that? And he explained it. Said, yeah, you know, over the years, my dog, you know, got imprinted on it. So now it's a little bit easier having that target odor. I know it's not, we use real. I mean, we've always used real. Either if it's not issued by the DEA, we have it from the property room. It's tested and weighed. So we have that advantage of, because of, we do get bulk amounts and we get to train on bulk amounts. We train on, you know, scented toothpicks and cotton balls and little pieces of towel all the way up to 10, 15, 20 pounds at a time on training days. And so we have that advantage, but we don't have that advantage with fentanyl.
Yeah.
So we have to find a way, okay, how can we certify out of those on fentanyl?
So when you talked to the prosecutors, and, you know, one of the issues that gets brought up is that fentanyl is legal to possess. So I imagine they had that concern. And then what was the discussion, and how, you know, what did you guys decide in those meetings early on?
The the discussion was, okay, this is a legal substance, just like, you know, Oxy is a legal substance. And that was one of the things that came up, because of the abuse of Oxy. They said, but who's the possessor and how they possess it?
Yeah.
So if you, you know, in all my years of doing this and all the other guys and the amount of dogs that I've trained and the dogs that I'm still training, I can ask that question. How many have ever found a legal amount where somebody had a prescription for fentanyl? And the answer is always zero.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, it's the same thing. If you're, you know, it's how, it's the same thing with the marijuana issue too. It's like, I don't agree with taking your dog off marijuana. You know, either have a legal amount, you don't, you either possess it legally or you don't. And, it's the same thing in this case too. Do you have a legal prescription for this? And, you know, I know it comes in lozenger forms, which I've never seen, but that's a prescription. And there's, I think there's another, there's another form that it comes. I think it's lozenges and a patch. That's it, a patch. And again, I can't recall ever running into that. It's always that illegal form. It's powder, and it's wrapped like your typical drug trafficker dealer has it.
But I guess one of the concerns is that, so your dog is on fentanyl, and this is what has happened, like in our state. And my advice, I agree that, you know, the dogs, in an ideal world, we'd have common sense and prosecutors who want to prosecute every case. But what I've seen, at least a lot of places, is that a lot of prosecutors just want an excuse to make a case go away. With that, when you have when you're putting a legal substance on your detector dog, have you seen any instances of the prosecutors on a totally unrelated case, dogs out and hits on a car, and you find, you know, whatever, a different substance not related to fentanyl, and have the prosecutor want to balk at it because of, you know, any possible objection that might come up?
As far as if the dog hits on a car and it's not fentanyl?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's happened in Colorado, is that some of the and we lost a case that, quite frankly, should never have went to court. And the part of it was that it was a marijuana dog, marijuana imprinted dog. The case should have never went to court. They should have never pressed the issue. But when it was all said and done, obviously, you know, that case said that, you know, dogs imprint on a marijuana needed, you know, an additional step here in Colorado. So I guess my thought process is, I know that one of the objections when I talk to people is that the prosecutor might say, well, if your dog is imprinted on a legal substance, you know, just because you found this methamphetamine in the trunk of this guy's car, I don't want the case anymore. So I take it you haven't had that problem where you're at?
No. I mean, and again, you have to make the argument. You have to put it in that prosecutor's mind or the court's mind, the same thing. Our dogs are trained on legal substances.
Yeah.
You have a bomb dog. It's trained to find legal substances, guns, ammo, maybe if you have a gun dog. I train arson dogs. Every accelerant is a legal substance, but it's how it's used and how it's possessed and how was it used in the crime. So you can go along the same lines, or, you know, can you legally possess this gun, and can you legally possess, you know, the amphetamines in your car or anything else? Like, you know, we had a guy dealing Adderall. It's a legal substance, but
yeah.
in his possession and how he was doing it, it was illegal. Yeah. So that's it comes along the same lines. But again, we're talking, you know, probably one of the deadliest drugs that hit our country.
Oh, yeah.
In time is fentanyl. And, you know, you got 110,000 deaths alone last year attributed to fentanyl in this country last year. We had 980 overdose deaths in Indianapolis alone.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
and it's to the point they have us investigating overdose deaths before homicide gets there. Hey, can you, and I know that's happening around the cities, like I said, where I go and I teach, I'm finding out, hey, yeah, we're assigned on a call to go investigate overdose deaths now. And can we get into the cell phone and see who the dealer is? So, and work it back. And, you know, a lot of these cases are the fake pills, the unintended death, because they sold a Xanax bar laced with fentanyl.
Yeah.
And it killed somebody. So,
so I guess just going one more question on this prosecutor thing. I know you guys are busy and you're, you know, finding a lot of stuff and prosecuting a lot of cases. Are you, do you have the luxury of dealing with generally the same prosecutors or the same team in the DA's office or the state attorney's office or the federal prosecutors? Yeah. So you deal with the same people pretty regularly, I assume.
On the AUSA side, on the federal side, yes. On the state side, no. And this is where education comes in. And I've done presentation for prosecutors or even our attorney general's office, where we had to go in and go explain what our dogs can do. I would say this to your listeners, invite your prosecutors to your training. Let them see what the dogs can and can't do. When you're explaining what a change in behavior is, and I've had prosecutors come to training and go, wow, now I understand what you're talking about, because they saw the change in behavior. You know, it makes a big difference when they can actually see it than just read it.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm talking about. It's educating them and saying, yeah, I know this is a legal substance. However, and it didn't take long. It was like, yeah, we're on board. Let's do this.
Yeah.
But every case by case, and I have a lot of guys that do call me, like I said, those donut counties that I train, and some of the my own guys will call up before a case and go, hey, this prosecutor's asking these questions, and I'll have to cite some case laws to them. So this is not, you know, uncommon anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, educating a prosecutor or even even the judge or somebody in the court.
Yeah.
And I think it's just it takes a talent not just to be a dog handler, but hey, can you go get through all of through this case and get on the stand and be able to articulate exactly what you know and be the expert.
And yeah, and I think that's a great
whole nother that's a whole nother topic.
Yeah. But I think that's a great point, that being a dog handler isn't just having a leash in your hand. There's other parts of it, and being, you know, I talk about a lot of times when we're talking about the patrol dog stuff, you know, when everything's going wrong on a big scene, a lot of times even different, you know, levels of command will be looking at the dog handler as the tactical expert. You know, how do you want to handle this? And I think on these types of things, you're the prosecution expert, and having those relationships before the trial and before the case, I think is really valuable. So I think I love your idea of calling up your prosecutor before you're trying to talk to him in the middle of a case, get to know him, have him come out to training, show them what you can do and get that dialogue going. So that way, when the case comes and they're ready to dismiss it, then you already have a relationship and you say, hey, can I come down and talk to you about it? And let's go over it and I'll explain to you, you know, my side of it. And maybe they won't be so quick to dismiss it. And I don't like to sound, you know, like I'm bitter about things, but I've just seen that lots and lots of places, not just, you know, here in Colorado, but and talked to people, I'm sure you have too, that a lot of prosecutors, because they're overworked, you know, if they can find a reason to dismiss case, they'll move on and tell you how to get them the next time. But I think having those relationships before that helps deter some of that.
Exactly. You know, it is that too. And, you know, we've had cases where I encourage guys, don't just let things go just because you lose the case. If you can push an appeal and explain why, but come across as that expert, you know?
Yeah.
And I got good advice from a prosecutor years ago that says, you guys get on the stand sometimes and I ask about your training experience and you just talk about, you know, when you went to the academy and when you were training. Meanwhile, you have a litany of training that you went to and you're not talking about it.
Yeah.
So it's important to come across like that. And speak, like I said, speaking of which, I know you spoke to Mike. And, you know, I go back a long ways in this field. I know that when he took over for Terry Fleck, and I was friends with Terry and Terry a while ago, and what a great resource. And I'm, you know, again, you know, getting on Sheepdog Guardian, there's a lot of resources on there. And I use it all the time. And I know, like I said, Mike and I had this discussion about the fentanyl.
Yeah.
He brought up some good, you know, points about it. And I think, you know, following up is important, number one. And I'm not saying that everybody should do it. I'm just saying if you have an influx of fentanyl and fentanyl deaths in your city, and you have a way of doing it safely, and you can talk to your prosecutors and make sure that they're on board.
Yeah.
And again, explain to it, hey, yeah, it's a legal substance, but we don't see it in legal forms ever.
I mean, exactly.
Again, we've been doing it for a long time. And the amount of stuff that we're pulling out of our area here, not just parcels, but on the road, on search warrants, on, you know, in storage units, and every aspect that we do, we've never run across a legal amount.
Well, and I talked to a guy one time who does a lot of different interdiction stuff out of the Oakland area, and I thought he had a real smart idea one time, and he told me that on that same subject, he went to all of the major chain pharmacies and talked to them and said, how many prescriptions have you written for fentanyl? And it was like zero across the board. So they said that, you know, there's patches, but they're through the hospital. But the amount of times that people would go to a lot of these pharmacies and get the lozenges or the patches, I shouldn't say it was zero, but it was extremely low, you know, compared to the number of customers they had. So he used that as one of his arguments just to further it, that these people that, you know, have it are not possessing it legally. And the people who are possessing it legally are not putting themselves in the position to be contacted by the police a lot of times. Right. So,
yeah. And I know there's going to be pushback from trainers or certifying bodies saying, don't do it. Don't put your dogs on fentanyl. But when the dogs do hit on fentanyl and you get a case that comes forward, they're going to have to somehow explain why the dog hit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we're just eliminating that step right now, because we've already done it and we won our cases saying, hey, it was unintended, but because of there's so much out there and the dogs are hitting on it. There's something else that I just wanted to bring up real quick is I don't know if you guys are seeing it in your area, but the xylazine that's being cut into fentanyl. Have you heard about this?
I've heard a little bit about it, but okay, I'd like to go deeper into that.
Yeah, let me real quick. It's very dangerous. Okay, so there's no testing for xylazine. There's no way to knowing. It's a similar opiate. You know, you get the overdose is pretty similar, okay? But they include pinpoint pupil, slow respirations, respiratory arrest, and hypotension. You'll get tissue necrosis in the extremities. If you look it up, you'll see there's some pretty disgusting pictures online where they're amputating from where the injection sites are. Now, when it comes to the dogs, intoxication in dogs include muscle tremors, seizures, slow heart rate and partial heart block, and slowed breathing rate. Dogs can also swallow excess air that can cause bloating. And this vet, what he put out this information was, he said, while xylazine mimics the effects of opiates, it is critical to recognize that naloxone and classical reversal agents to opiate intoxications on the xylazine does not reverse the effects. So that's something else that we're going to be dealing with down the road here.
And is there any first aid for them known right now?
None. Zero. So that's, you know, that's a danger in itself.
Sure.
Is this xylazine. So, we're seeing it here. I was talking to a guy that I taught a class with in Philly, and they said they're seeing a lot of it out there. So I think it's a matter of time. I don't know how, you know, again, I just want to put that out there for the dog handlers out there. If you see those symptoms, for whatever reason, it's going to mimic a lot of the seizures or a tremor or a bloating.
And is this stuff, is it basically you're finding it the same way? It's like just an alternative to fentanyl, if you will. Is that basically
they're using it, they're cutting it with fentanyl.
So when you're finding it, it's part of it.
Yeah. So what they're doing now, they're taking that fentanyl high, and now it's taking us to the next level.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, and again, it's not real common yet, but just something that can be common. I just wanted to put it out there that, you know, the death rate would probably go up even more. And again, there's people losing the limbs, their legs, or, you know, wherever the ejection sites are, they're rotting.
Wow.
And they're amputating these areas due to this xylazine product in the fentanyl.
Huh.
But like I said, I don't want to get too far off.
No,
topic,
but it's a good thing to mention. So once you had decided to, we're going to start imprinting the dogs, and we kind of talked about this a little bit already, but let's just go over that. So you were on board. Were you going to do just a few dogs at first, or were you just going to transfer all your NARC dogs over and say, we're going to imprint all of them?
No, we transferred them all over.
So
because they're all getting requests. They're all getting, the amount of work we're doing, the amount of searches we're doing, you know, every year are in the thousands. We want to make sure that everybody was imprinted and good to go.
Yeah.
Now the dogs that have already found it didn't take any time at
sure,
all. Once
sure.
Once we got the precision explosive target odors, it didn't take them. I mean, they were hitting it immediately.
Yeah.
Now we got a 5 gram and a 70 gram odor packet, and again, I like it. You know, I followed his protocols. They're in the Marlar bags, and they're handled with gloves or you know, a tweezer or something to put out. But the fact that some of the dogs that have not really been exposed to it, it took about probably 2 to 3 or 4 reps before, okay, there's that change of behavior
sure.
on their own.
Yeah.
And we use it. We train 3 to 4 times a month. So we put it out almost every time. And then in the same thing, like I said, we're continuously putting the distractors out in other the cutting agents, the packaging, and especially for me, you know, mine's all about being wrapped in plastic, and I even have packing tape now that I'm proofing my dog with.
Yeah.
Because this, for whatever reason, there's a packing tape out there that has a weird smell to it. So I have a roll of packing tape next to my dog's kennel, so she just smells it every day, and it's like, oh, that's just a regular odor.
Yeah.
That's a good way to proof if anybody wants to steal that.
That's a great idea.
Plastic bags, tennis balls, packing tape, and it's right next to my dog's kennel in the back seat. It's behind the cage or right in front of the cage.
Yeah.
And it's hey, that's an odor. Okay.
But it's not going to get me paid.
It's an everyday odor. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I do that, and I also, you know, we put it out in boxes, lockers, or whatever odors we're using. But we have, and everything's documented. And anytime we do go to court, and every time, you know, one of my handlers come to me and go, hey, Gary, I got this case there. The defense attorney said the only reason my dog indicated on that vehicle because he was distracted by another dog. Well, we run 2 dogs at a time at training sometimes. We just trained this past Tuesday, and I put the loudest barkingest dog next to our training site because every time he sees the dog training, he barks. And the handler's like, let me move him. I go, no, leave him there. I'm sitting there barking the whole time.
Yep.
And we run our training with a barking dog. And then we document it.
Yep.
And when they bring it up, we say, no, we run our training. Sometimes we'll run 2 dogs at a time, and we'll have a barking dog next to training. So just the little things that we throw in there.
Sure.
But again, with the fentanyl odors, once they were imprinted, it's easier now that they don't have to try to go through this long explanation of the unintended information. They can say, I'm certified and this is what we use.
And do you guys do an in-house certification?
We do an in-house certification, but when we go outside, I bring them with me. So we've had that before where our certifiers, we go to an outside certifier, which we do every year. They don't always have MDMA. I bring MDMA. I say, we're not certifying this. I say, I need you to put this out. So the same thing with the fentanyl. It's just we'll bring it with us and say, we need to certify on this. So there's another thing. I mean, we certify a single blind once a year. And I don't know if I ever discussed this, but we do a double blind also. Because if I'm running training and a certification, I don't want that to go into things. So we won't double blind more than 2 or 3 dogs.
Yeah.
And this is the reason why anybody doing double blind or just thinking about it, you know, once that observer sees 3 dogs go through, they're like, well, okay, I know these dogs.
Yeah.
They're in the right spot. And then you got to rotate that observer out.
Yeah.
Just
it's no longer double blind. No longer double blind.
It's no longer, exactly. It's no longer double blind. So you got to rotate that observer out too that doesn't know where the hides are. So we try, like I said, we're staying. The reason we do all these things, and because of the amount of federal cases that we're putting on the table, and we're trying to stay ahead of everything, and there's no questions, and we're winning. We're successful because of that, and you can't get lazy in your training. So even if you're going to imprint the fentanyl, just do your homework.
Yeah.
And don't just, sometimes, guys do that check the box of training. Let's put all our four odors out or all our bomb odors out. And okay, the dog hit everything. Heck, man, you can have that dog down for 3 months and he'd come out and hit that odor again 3 months down the road.
Yeah. I always stress to my guys when I train them that, and I challenge them on it from day one, that when they put an odor out, that they have to have a reason why they put that odor out and why they put it in a certain place. And I just, from day one, that there's a purpose behind why you're putting it out, not just checking the box and, trying to fill out a training sheet. So I think we're on the same page that way. So you used the precision explosives. Have you gone and have you used real odor at all? Like from a seizure or anything, or have you just stuck with?
No, we do. Yeah. Yeah. So again, because of our protocols, our SOPs, I mean, we can't hold on to it. It'd have to be signed in and signed back out again, which they won't do with the fentanyl. So just prior to that case going through, or we need to, like, for me at FedEx, a lot of it's going to go in for disposal.
Yeah.
So if I intercept something going to another state and I can't get hold of anybody to control delivery in that state, then we'll keep it. And then I'll alert the guys, hey, I got 3 kilos out of a box recently. Uh-huh. So come by and run this box of fentanyl. And that gives us an opportunity to run the real
stuff. And what's the safety protocol for that? I mean, imagine it's pretty well packaged at that point, and it's not.
It's very well packaged. So I'm sure the threshold isn't the threshold is where it's where they're going to get the alert, but
sure,
it's not so much exposure that it's going to be dangerous to the dog.
Yeah. And when you're seizing, are you seizing mostly the pill form now, or are you getting powder still?
No, that was powder.
Okay.
Yeah. I've gotten pill form, but I don't use the pill form for training.
Yeah.
I haven't, if I get the powder form, I use that for training. But for the most part, we're going to stick to what we're getting from Precision, and then, rotate that out, yearly probably, just to make sure, it's good. We're good to go. And I don't get any stipend from Todd on this, so if he's listening, he wants to throw me something, that's fine. Same with Mike, both those guys, I appreciate you having them on. And, I've been doing this for 27 years, but I still listen to these podcasts. I learn from them. I mean, don't ever think that just because you got so many years on, you can't learn.
Oh, I feel fortunate to be able to do this podcast. And I go to all the classes that I can when I'm, at our HIT seminar, and sit and listen to them, and I learn something constantly. And I think that that's what makes people, probably stick around this profession longer, when you're open-minded and still want to learn new techniques and learn stuff. So absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. No, I do. And again, it's a good resource as is Mike's website and everything that he's doing there from, updating the canine legal stuff, but the resources on the other end.
Yeah.
That you can go into, I'm in the Seventh Circuit. I can look up recent Seventh Circuit cases. I mean, everything's in there for you.
Yeah, it's a great resource.
And he's very approachable. So good to hear that you're going to have him on in the future. Podcast too.
Yeah, he's going to be regular doing some updates for us. So, but I think this has been a really good topic, and I just wanted to bring you on because I think, like I said, I know there's other agencies that are doing it. I know, Border Patrol, for example. But as far as, state and local agencies, from the people I've talked to, I think you're probably one of the leaders in doing it, as far as maybe doing it a little bit sooner than some people, as far as imprinting on fentanyl. And then definitely with the seizures and the prosecutions based on a dog alert, I think I don't know too many people who have done it more than you have. So sharing your experience is valuable. Would you mind if we throw it out there that if listeners have questions, they can contact me like we did last time, and I'll forward you the emails.
Absolutely, 100%.
And use Gary as a resource, fantastic resource, not just for parcel interdictions and fentanyl, but for all kinds of dog training. So I mean, I appreciate you coming on and taking the time, sharing all your knowledge. And I know you guys are really doing a lot of good work there. So hopefully this has been good, valuable information for people who are considering doing it. And I would just maybe say, if you're listening to this podcast and you're still considering doing it, shoot me an email at jeff@hitscanine.net. Any questions you have, and I'll forward them on to all these experts, and you can get any questions answered even before you start. So these guys are more than willing to help everybody out there. So I appreciate it, Gary. Thank you, and be safe.
No, thank you. I appreciate it too. And if I get anything down the road where we're challenged on using not a real target odor, then I'll come back and let you know. But right now there are no cases where target those pseudo odors are being challenged. So, but if something does change in our end because of the amount we're doing and we're using precision, I don't anticipate it. But if something does happen, I'll alert you.
Excellent. Excellent.
Thanks for your time, Jeff.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right.
Well, that's going to wrap up our second part of our fentanyl two-part episodes. Hopefully, this has been good information for those of you that are working narc dogs. Maybe it'll help you decide as an agency what you're going to do about fentanyl, whether you're going to imprint or not. I think there's a lot of good information. That answer is probably going to keep changing over time, as a lot of things in our profession do. But right now, I think there's a lot of good information out there. Talk to local agencies around you also, see what they're doing. And work with your training groups, make sure that everybody's on the same page, at least in your area. I think that's real important. If you like these types of discussions, I always remind everybody that you can come to HITS in Scottsdale this year. In August, we'll be in Scottsdale, which is Phoenix area. There'll be 1,200 fellow handlers there, probably a few more. All kinds of discussions, not just about fentanyl, but about anything police dog related. Lots of networking opportunities, lots of great instructors. Check out hitscanine.net for the webpage. Got all the instructors listed so far that we have. Over 80, 90 vendors that'll be there. So any equipment, any dog vendors that you want to meet, most of them will be represented at HITS in Scottsdale this year in August. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate listening, and stay safe out there.